Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
The echoes of the bagpipes are already fading from the funeral of Police Commander Paul Bauer. It is part of our liturgy of pain in the city of Chicago. A cop's funeral. The bagpipes. The sound of the pipes drift away, like the speeches from politicians and pundits saying Bauer gave his life in public service. But Commander Paul Bauer didn't give up his life. His life was taken from him. And if he'd shot first, he'd been accused of brutality, racism, and all that would be part of another liturgy that we know all too well, the liturgy of politics of Chicago. But Bauer didn't shoot first, he didn't even draw his gun, and he's dead. And cops know this, and because they know this, they know something else. They know they're alone. And despite the community groups and the political law and order speeches and the outpouring of official sympathy and the thank you for your service that we say to them when we see them, they know that they're alone. When they get shot to death on our streets, we give them a state funeral and plenty of media coverage. When they give us a ticket and walk away, we give them the finger. If we're arrested, it's never our fault. It's always their fault, because we're all victims of something, and we have our excuses, and they're the cops. And we curse them until we need them, and then when we need them, we call them heroes. But they're not all heroes. Like reporters, some are lousy. And when one turns bad and beats somebody or takes money or lies under oath or frames the innocent, we blame them all. They wade through the stupid brutality of crime. They clean up the human garbage because that's what they do. They're the garbage men. Although the garbage that they pick up sometimes has a gun or a knife or a needle in the pocket. We don't really want to know how it's done. And they do. And we don't want to know the price that they pay. We wouldn't like it, and they wouldn't tell us anyway, even if we asked. But here's what they do. They pick up the dead infants frozen in plastic bags left on the back of some wooden porch. They listen to the man explain why he stabbed his brother to death over a 98-cent cigarette lighter. They hear the reasons of the monsters who lure children on playgrounds. They look away when the political hacks play the tough guy, wearing their fancy political guns and pretending they're the police, and they shake the hands of politicians politicking in front of the cameras, like police critic and Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle, showing up in front of the morgue, sticking out her hand, moving from corner to corner to corner, knowing where the cameras were. The cop shook her hand because if they didn't, they know it would happen. They have careers too, and politics has its rules. Now, there are wolves out there. You saw them on that video from the jail when Bauer's killer was walked through on the way back from court. They cheered him. They clapped. They honored the killer. They honored the cop killer. And for all the complaints that we throw at cops, including legitimate ones, we forget too often that they're somebody's daughter or son. And we forget that they're not the ones who are the wolves. They're the shepherds. And that's why they picked up the badge, to be the shepherd. So they can't trust anybody. Nobody but one of their own would understand. And they gather at funerals, quiet, like the one over the weekend for Commander Bauer, and like all the other ones for all the other slain officers. When the sound of the bagpipes fade, they go off to drink with their kind. because they're cops and they're alone. This is the Chicago Way with John Cass and Jeff Carlin.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand with pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
So much to talk about, Jeff Carlin, here on the Chicago Way with you, my friend. We've got Ted Dabrowski from WirePoints.com. Fascinating economic study on what the pensions really mean.
Really? A very tactful breakdown of why there's problems in the pension systems that aren't, that are quote-unquote underfunded or unfunded.
And if you pay taxes, whether you're union or not, public worker or private sector worker without a pension, you might want to listen. Stay tuned, because the guy's fascinating, and I'm probably going to be writing about it as well. But in the meantime, there's so many other things going on. Number one, I mean, we have serious news, but we also have, like, sports news. The White Sox are coming to WGN, Mr. WGN.
Yes, it is. Big announcement this week. Yeah, this past week, rather. Lots of excitement around here. Lots of White Sox paraphernalia being thrown about.
The Bulls, too, or just the White
Sox? No, just the White Sox. No.
All right, so this is going to be awesome for me. Because for years, this built just at the end of my tenure,
right.
30 years in this building, and they kicked me out so I could go work in an insurance office someplace. This beautiful Tribune Tower will have black and the real colors, black and white.
Love that. Which are neither actual colors.
They're the absence of color. What's the other one?
White is all color, so it's every possible color. So it's not really a color.
Are you sure white is all colors?
Yes, that's what makes white light.
Please take your crayons and start taking magenta, peach, blue, yellow, and in a circle. It won't turn white.
No, those aren't colors. Those are crayons.
Oh, okay.
Color is light. White light is the combination of all spectrums of light, and we perceive it as white.
Mr. Science. Yes. But anyway, that means that we'll see.
Yeah.
We're going to see the white and black, the Sox logo on the Tribune Tower.
You sure will.
It's
going to be. It's going to be something. Yeah. We are in the new home. Your first game will be this week on Friday.
That happened quick, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Just
quickly. That's what happens. You know, they were on a different station, a station we know quite well, and it just couldn't handle it, apparently.
Yeah. They didn't want us. We had to go.
I know. It's interesting. I'm looking forward to it. You know, it's exciting. I like new things and different things. It's always exciting. But at the same time, the Sox play some games during the time frame when we're usually broadcasting, so something's got to change there, so I'm not sure what that means. But
they play a lot of night games.
They do. They do play a lot of night games.
My favorite afternoon program of all the programs in the world is the Rokan show with Anna Devlanis on WGN, which I listen to religiously when I'm driving home after a long day's work.
Yeah.
And I have to say, Jeff Carlin is the producer of that show. So you're going to be in like time warp, right?
Yeah. I mean, there'll be some flexibility here. We may do some secondary stream stuff, or maybe just only do a couple hours in between games or after games, before games, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. But, you know, an opportunity to go out to the White Sox, to the G.
Right.
To do some broadcasts, which is fun, except Park is great.
Roper at White Sox, because I know Rich Roper is a big part of your show.
He's excited.
He's a season ticket holder. I used to be. Now I'm a Fire season ticket holder.
Yeah.
But that should be interesting, and maybe Jeff Carlin can score me some tickets.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised.
That'd be so cool. That would be so cool. Only the premier games with the Yankees.
No.
Anyway, there's other stuff going on, and I know we got so much serious stuff and everything.
Yeah, there's a lot of bad news out there.
Okay, do you want to deal with it?
Yeah, let's deal with it.
All right, okay. Florida.
Yeah.
Shooting.
Mm-hmm.
The 17 children shot and killed and more.
And adults.
And adults and more wounded. There was just another shooting at the Hyatt Regency.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the television. Okay, here's my take. First of all, I'm stunned that it keeps happening.
Yeah.
But what I'm not stunned about is that immediately the hysteria starts.
Yeah.
On the right, you have people saying they're all the mentally ill have to be locked up. On the left, which is loudest, and it is extremely loud, and I hear it in my ears sometimes, and I read it through my eyes, my unbelieving eyes sometimes, locally.
Sure.
Where I see a lot of hysteria to the point where I know it's bad, okay? It's a bad thing, but when bad things happen, the last thing I need as a citizen, as a grown-up, and as a parent, is somebody virtue signaling, screaming like a baby, hysterically over something that offering solutions that really aren't solutions. I want real solutions, not screaming. Okay? And I found that this constant, they were, as soon as the thing happened in Florida, there are morons on the left on Twitter saying, oh, Cass is going to write so-and-so and such.
Oh,
already.
Yeah.
They're trying to tell you what to not write and write. They're trying to shame you out of it because, you know, they think that if you, lock up everybody with guns, that there won't be any more killings? What do they think? They're babies.
Yeah. I mean, the mental health piece of it, I'll start right.
Yeah, okay, let's start there.
It's disingenuous. I mean, Republicans have defunded mental health in this country for decades.
They're not the only ones.
No, they're not. But they've led the way on a lot of it. And it comes across as disingenuous. I mean, that's their fallback position on it.
And I will offer the counter argument that when Obama, praise be his name, since we're building the temple of his love on our city so that Rahm Emanuel can get reelected.
Right.
Democrats had veto-proof majorities in both the House and the Senate, and Obama, praise be his name, did not do anything. They didn't do anything. They didn't do what Democrats are shrieking about now, and some of these baby mouth pundits are shrieking about.
Yeah, absolutely, right? Absolutely. I mean, that's very true. And then you go to the left, and the left is saying, "Oh, well, you know, guns are terrible, and guns
don't,
are
don't say thoughts and prayers."
Right? Yeah, that save your thoughts and prayers. It's crazy. The NRA in this country has way too much power. Just carte blanche. They throw so much money at our Congress.
Yeah.
And it's too much power for one group to have.
What, are you going
to
like lock them up like the Knights Templar?
No,
you're going to burn them, King Philip.
No, I don't. I don't generally think they're bad people. I mean, they're not. I guarantee them. A lot of the people who aren't doing these shootings are not NRA members. They're not the people who are responsible. Right. But the NRA stands in the way of just basic ideas for controlling things.
So
in Chicago, a cop was killed by a gentleman who had a gun with a 30-round magazine on a handgun.
Yeah.
Why does that even exist? Why do people fight for that right to have that piece?
Do you understand what the Second Amendment's about? Do you think it's about hunting?
No, it's about protecting yourself from the government.
Right.
Okay, so when was the last time somebody... let me finish my point. John.
Okay.
When was the last time...
Let's have a fight.
Yeah, let's have a fight. When was the last time somebody in this country defended themselves from the government and needed a 30-round clip to do so? Or a 30-round magazine, pardon me.
1860?
1860. They didn't even exist then.
And Cliven Bundy? Who was proven innocent?
He was proven innocent. And he didn't need a 30-round clip and a handgun to do so.
To me, that's not the issue. And I understand.
It's part of the issue. The idea that there can't be any restraints on weaponry in this country
is ridiculous. Only single shot weapons for citizens.
We don't let people have missiles. We don't let people have bombs. We draw a line.
I reject it.
How? Why?
I see where this is going. Here's what I'd say to do. The FBI knew knew of this guy. Mm-hmm. They knew that he was saying on YouTube, I want to be a school shooter.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't coordinate with local police to find out. The local police had stopped at Mr. Cruz's house 58 times.
Yeah.
Okay? something's wrong there.
Sure.
That system's breaking down, number one. So let's have that system work. Number two, security at schools. Schools are soft targets.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, we're not in Narnia, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This happened. You know where it doesn't happen? God forbid it happens now, but you know where it doesn't happen? At Jewish schools. You know why? Because when they have security guards there, no offense to our other security guards, but at a Jewish school, the security guards are not looking at their cell phone playing Candy Crush.
Right. We know of anybody.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They're not this serious business mm-hmm. for these guys, because they know, because Jews are the number one group that is targeted by hate crimes and a lot of violence and mm-hmm. viciousness in this country and everywhere else in the world. So they've had to come to a realization of how to protect their schools. So
sure.
what it is egress and entrance, one way in and out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's covered electronically, glass, everything.
Sure.
And there's heavy weapons behind it. And if you get past that, you will be funneled into another spot where you can't do damage.
Right.
Okay, so we have to, I'm just saying, I don't want to hear more hysteria like I read from liberal screaming baby talk. I want real solutions here. I don't need the screaming. It's not going to do anything. All that is virtue signaling. So I would suggest, per my own view, I would suggest real security at schools, one way in, one way out, for starters. A coordination between state and local and federal law enforcement agencies about social media and these kids, okay, who mm-hmm. talk like this. And I would say another thing. I'll go on the other side. I think that people who have mental illness should not have weapons.
Absolutely.
They should probably not have cars either.
Yeah, I mean, we know what happens. I mean, they're not monsters. They're not horrible, evil things.
They are. They're evil.
They're
monsters.
Afflicted. They're afflicted.
You know what? I'm not going to hug this kid.
I'm not going to hug.
But you can't hit a dog. Doesn't bite unless it's been kicked a lot of times in its life. And I can see that with a lot of kids in our
mm-hmm.
in our cities that go, you know, on the criminal side because they don't have anything else. This is different. These are kids of privilege.
This kid wasn't a kid of privilege. He was an adopted child whose both parents died in the last 18 months, or a few years, rather.
And he's on the video saying he wants to shoot up a school.
Yeah, the system failed entirely, and those fixes, I'm all for that. And I think the idea that mental health is not taken seriously as it should in this country.
Should we have make it easier to have involuntary commitments?
I think so. I mean, I think
should
so.
Should we pay for less, like say, less wars and more
absolutely.
Lock them up,
absolutely.
Lock up psychos, mental health community. Yeah. I don't know what else to call it.
Absolutely. I think.
Institutionalization?
And it's not even, it's not just a lock up, it's treat. I mean, these people are, the brain is such a complex thing.
You know what,
thing.
Though? I want to take off my monitor, my ankle monitor. I just didn't feel like taking my meds. You see how that goes? Then what? Somebody's dead?
Well, but
once you cross a line a couple times, you're done. You're gone. You're cut out. You can't be around the regular sheep. You're like a deranged.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like the guy who shot Commander Bauer. should have been spending his whole life behind bars because he doesn't understand society.
How
he doesn't
about
work
the guy,
within society?
How about the man who likes little girls?
Yeah, the doctor.
You're a broken toy, baby. You just got to be put away
absolutely.
Forever. Actually, what about this? You know, I'm not for capital punishment, but should there be capital punishment for people like that?
Cop killers,
for school shooter guys like that?
I believe it. I believe it that, like you said, the broken toys. I mean, there are people who have proven to us that they don't conform to society. And I'm not talking about, you know, the general conformity. I'm talking about general rules of society, as in don't kill somebody else, don't hurt somebody else.
Right.
Absolutely. I mean, if someone proves that they are incapable of being a human being, which means love thy neighbor, we don't need you. Goodbye.
All right. What about the other piece, which is I'm going to argue, and maybe this is too, you know, right wing for all the, you know, little insects out there with cartoon heads on Twitter that will tweet me. But what about the culture of death in this country? A culture of violence, a culture of death. I'm amazed when, like, we have a Me Too movement, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't abuse women. But these same celebrities who cleave to the Me Too movement also are hanging out with rappers who call women bitches and put them on videos as sex objects or worse. I don't understand that. I don't understand. I like playing Call of Duty. I'm a Call of Duty. You know, I've been into it. Right? But I don't know now. I'm thinking, do we have a culture where that glorifies death and violence? That maybe the broken toys can't handle that.
Are you suggesting the idea, or I mean, suggesting that this fix to that would be to not have that type of stuff out there? I mean,
I'm just saying that maybe we should start thinking about what we do to ourselves and each other. We talk about health all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, let's have green drinks, like Lauren Cohen with her green drink.
Right.
I told her she's going to show up in a few weeks. Yeah. I told her, please, no green drinks, Lauren. I can't. But you know what I mean? She's into health, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's good. But what about mental health? And here's another one, Jeff Garlin. And this is going to be controversial, too. But it amazes me that I have all the left screaming that they want to get rid of rights. They want to get rid of the Second Amendment. They don't care about the Fourth Amendment when it suits their purposes, a right to search and seizure. They want to lock people up. They want to shut your First Amendment rights down, get rid of certain postings on, you know. So I don't know what is a threatening post and what is John Cass calling out Toni Preckwinkle for shaking hands at the, you know, in front of the morgue and mocking her. Is that threatening too? Maybe to her?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. Should I be locked up for that? Here's another one. How many babies have we killed in this country over the past 40 years? 100 million? 50 million? We've aborted tens and tens and tens of millions of babies. And I'm just wondering, can we have a culture that does that and then also legitimately ask itself, what about the violence and our nihilism? How can you not look at the first when we're talking, you know, the former without talking about the latter? Jeff Garlin?
That's an easy one, right?
It's not easy,
I know. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of wrong with our culture, and you and I have talked about this for a while now. I mean, this is our 93rd episode or so that the Chicago Way.
And I hear that viewers or listeners are increasing all the time.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know. I mean, yeah, our society is definitely broken. I mean, I top to bottom. There's so much wrong with the way we do things. And I don't know. I don't know what we do. I mean, we can try to take little pieces here or there. We can try to take little steps here and there, but you know, the system for this guy in Florida,
this Cruz kid,
easily slipped through the cracks. I mean, and not even cracks. It just, he walked through the process.
He's obviously somebody that didn't want around.
Right.
But isn't that the kid that you want around? Like the kid that you say, you're too much trouble. Get out of here, kid. You're weird. You're screwed up. You're creepy. Get out of here. Isn't that the kid that really needs the hug? Isn't that the kid needs the help?
I mean,
you know what I'm saying?
We just said that if he's that kid, I know, there's mental issue
behind
him.
I'm trying to think this out.
I know.
I'm not trying to scream and virtue signal like so many of these. I read some of this stuff. I was like, are you really a grown-up?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't believe some of the stuff I'm reading and listening to. But what about that? Maybe that kid needs help? I mean,
absolutely. Right? I mean, needed something else. Needed something in his life that was, there's a hole there, and he filled it with violence. I mean, that's the worst thing.
And, of course, one thing that used to fill that hole in our culture, we can't even talk about.
Yep. Unless you're,
it's weird. It's like, if we're on the air talking about this, we can't, it'll freak people out. If I'm an athlete who scores a touchdown and I say, thank you, Jesus, everyone's like, oh, that's cool. or kinda. No one's going to mock you.
Right.
But if you say, we've become so secular and so selfish that we don't even think in terms of Christ or other religious, you know, the other religions, the great ones, we can't talk about it. So there's a hole there too, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the things that these holes just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And you get more and more shootings and more death and more, you know, it's more and more corruption in politics and corruption in business and, you know, the people lose. I mean, we the people lose.
And we'll lose even more when we take away our rights, and that includes the Second Amendment, because we're afraid. I'll tell you why. And this came to me not from my own mind, but from the mind of my millennial, Spiro, one of the boys. And he said, Dad, you know all this screaming about the gun control and all that? I go, yeah, it's pretty intense now. It always gets intense.
Yeah.
He said, you always have to worry about people getting, when people are, people's emotions are getting ramped up. This is my son.
Yeah.
People's emotions are getting ramped up. That's when they're easily led.
Sure.
And he goes, remember that we've spent how many years in Iraq? We shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Oh.
We were there, right? Our emotions got revved up over 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted quick government action. We wanted action. What happened? I don't mind going to Afghanistan. I still don't know why we went to Iraq.
Nah.
I've apologized for it a million times. We've lost so many kids there and destroyed this country.
I know why we went to Iraq. We followed the lead of a illegitimate dossier.
Pardon me?
You've never heard that?
What?
There was the Italian intelligence that said that Saddam was selling weapons of mass destruction to Osama bin Laden.
Beware, my friend Jeff, of politically weaponized intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
We see it in Washington, where Trump, and whether you like him or not, he's under attack by politically weaponized intelligence, and we don't even want to deal with it. We don't even want to deal with the fact that maybe there were people in the FBI and CIA who were trying to take this guy down.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to do
And it swings
that.
Both way. Ajit Pai left out lots of pieces of information when they put forth their ideas on what we should do with the internet. You know, use the intel that they thought would support their need, and they left out other intel. I mean, it's the same thing with the tipping law that's being pushed or being discussed that would require servers to give all their tips to the House, and then the House would be able to keep some of that for themselves.
What is that? Where the hell do they come up with this idea?
That's the owners, you know, restaurant groups, they want it because it lets them put their hands on more money.
I would offer a suggestion to everybody who's listening, because Mr. Cass likes to go out on Friday night with Mrs. Cass. This is the only way I've figured out, because this last week I wrote 6 columns, 5, I usually write 4, I wrote 5, 2 in one day, and then, you know, the monologue. And on a Friday, I'm so full of dopamine, Jeff, right, that I cannot sleep for, you know, so I decided what we do is we go out, have a few drinks, just get out. Sorry, I don't go to the gym and work out with her, you know. But when you're at a restaurant, you pay with your credit card if you want. But you always tip in cash. I just think it's uncool. I've been a server. I know why I do it, because I want the servers not to pay tax on their tip.
Yeah, I don't know.
I want them to have that in their hand so that they don't have to go to a boss who says, yeah, but you broke 4 plates 2 days ago, and remember that meal that you screwed up. You know, I don't want that. I want them to have the money in their hands.
I spent over a decade working in high-end restaurants.
You tell me, am I wrong?
The cash thing is great. I get it. But I always, you know, you're required to declare your tips. And you get taxed on that. And I declared every penny of it.
You declared the cash?
Absolutely. For two reasons. One.
What? Because you thought I was an IRS agent?
No.
What?
One, I'm an idealist. My taxes pay for things I need. I need my things.
Yeah.
And I know.
I know, because if I can't put, with my taxes, if you can't put Karen Lewis on the beach in Hawaii, what right. kind of a person?
Right. No, I get that. But at the same time, if I got sick or if I got injured, being a server, technically an independent contractor for the most part.
Yeah.
There's no health, there's no injury insurance. So that would be based on or if I got fired, that would be based on my income that was reported to the government.
Oh, you're.
If I withhold 30% of that and I say, I'm going to declare this X number, then I'd be out of, I get lay off. Something happens.
For what is it called? Not workman's comp, but.
Workers insurance.
Employment insurance.
Right. So I would be screwed. I would get much less, and then it'd be harder for me. So I declared it, but I would never work for somebody who said, I'm going to withhold your tips because a plate broke or a glass broke or a meal was screwed up because that's a cost of business. That's how it works. They take that risk. I take the risk that
Why do they want to take the tipper's money?
Because they want to have their hands on it. I mean, they want to dole it out correct the way they see fit. So they want to give some to the cooks and they want to give some to the dishwashers. You know what we did? We tipped people who tipped that out. You'd tip the busboy. You would tip.
It's not like you're a doctor at county hospital and you need blood work done on a patient. So you tip the phlebotomists to move their butts to get your work done. No, this is. You're a waiter.
Mm-hmm.
You tip, and if you have a busboy who's really helping you, you want that busboy working your next shift.
Absolutely.
You want that back carrying your drink, worrying about your drinks. Correct.
Absolutely. And people would say, but the chefs make the food and the dishwashers. They also get paid at a rate that's higher. As a server, when I was working in Illinois, the pay rate was like $4.25 hour, and then you made up the difference in tips.
Right.
And I wouldn't want anybody standing between me and my tips. And even on a credit card, you knew what you got tipped. You knew what you were coming back.
I agree with you there, and I agree with you on so many things, and I want you to agree with me on some other thing that I'm going to bring up now.
All right.
Okay? First of all, newsflash, Kristen McQuarrie was going to be on the show, but she took the day off, right?
Yeah.
So I can't confess to her that what happened was Betty listened to the show.
Mm-hmm.
Recent show that we did for a podcast, Chicago Way, and she's like, Kristen likes This Is Us. So she started watching This Is Us, and I got dragged along with it.
No.
And I started crying. Okay.
No.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Oh, yeah. First one where the firefighter drops the baby, he lights a cigarette because you could smoke in the hospitals then. And he goes, no, that's not my kid. That's a kid I just found. They dropped him off. I start crying. Oh, my God. It's just a cry fest, okay? But I can't take it too much, so I'm skipping. I just pop in and out.
Sure.
When I want a good
cry. When you need a good tear duct cleaning.
I got another one, though.
Uh-oh.
Another show. Counterpart.
Mm-hmm.
You hear about it?
No.
It's on Starz, okay? And it's J.K. Simmons or J.G.
Simmons? J.K. Simmons.
All right. You know, what does he do? Like the We Are...
Yeah, he's...
What is
he's the Farmers.
Farmers. Yeah, he's that guy.
Yeah.
All right. But in this movie, in this show, he's a low-level intelligence analyst in a CIA-type spy factory in Germany. Okay?
Interesting.
But they speak English.
Yeah.
Like they switch from German to English. Okay. And then there's another
J.K.
Simmons from another Earth, that another alternate reality that he meets, who's like this badass spy. Okay? Like killer.
Yeah, he's 007 style.
Not so 007, but a killer.
Yeah.
And there's intermingling between these two universes, these worlds. It's just a tunnel under the ground, and you go under one and you come out the other side, and it's all locked away by both governments, and I'm not going to spoil it, But can I tell you something?
Uh-huh.
This is sci-fi, like Total Recall, like, but I mean, it's not science fiction-y looking.
Right. You know,
it's like,
yeah,
it's
yeah,
like
yeah.
a normal.
It's like, not Doctor Who.
No, not with like waves and colors and all that. And it's got some show. It's got some Homeland paranoia in it. It's got a lot of different. It borrows from one of my favorite shows that only lasted a year called Rubicon. It is. I can't tell you enough. If you watched like two episodes, you're going to be so hooked. It is so good. I'm just saying.
Maybe that's a solution to all our problems, John.
What? Just watch more TV?
No. We need science to catch up to this and develop ways to find alternate universes where, you know, you can pick your universe. You can go to the universe with no guns. You can go to the universe with no abortion. You can go to the universe with all religions or just your religion. I mean, then we would be all right. Then we could all just disperse.
Mr. Atos and the Atavacron. You know, Star Trek has an answer for everything.
Yeah.
And in one, there's a planet that's being destroying, it's falling apart. And Spock and Kirk and McCoy land on this planet, and everyone's almost gone except for this one librarian in this huge library. And you put a disc in of the period you want to go to on the planet, just like Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And then you walk through a door, and you go to that. That's where you live. So you could live in, if you like 16th century France, you could live there. Although, of course, I don't know what the toilet facilities were like.
Yeah.
That's why they had perfume, right,
John? Yes, that's exactly right. You know it doesn't have perfume, John?
What?
Illinois' pension system. That doesn't have perfume, and it stinks.
It stinks, and we're going to be talking to Ted Dabrowski of WirePoints.com, who's going to explain to us, but not in stinky detail, in clear detail, why the narrative and the political discussion about your money isn't exactly what it should be and what it seems. Next on the Chicago Way. Money. Okay, we're now joined by Ted Dabrowski of WirePoints.com. It is you could call it a business think tank, economics, news, an aggregation site. And what I like about it is there's real information about real things that are happening, not just fantasy nonsense.
Yeah, we've got to help people connect the dots, John, in Illinois. People are having a hard time connecting the dots between, you know, their high income taxes, their job prospects, their why their kids are leaving this state. They're trying to figure out how to connect all the mess in policy and what's happening, and we're trying to help them do that.
Well, one of the things we know is that people are leaving the state. There doesn't seem to be enough money. The Democrats, even though I used to be one long ago with Jimmy Carter, and left when there was too much malaise in my life, keep asking the people for money, and the people with means are leaving. So what about those of us who stay? What are we looking at here, and what are we seeing here?
Well, that's the problem, is that, you know, people with means are leaving. I think some of the people without means are leaving. And we've seen a population that's shrunk 4 years in a row. So what we have to do is start looking at, we can't just make people pay more and more for less and less services. We've got to challenge what all these liabilities, all these debts are, so that people can keep more of their money and stay here rather than have to go to Texas or Nashville or somewhere else where it's cheaper.
Well, one of the arguments that I keep hearing is, and this is from both sides, the unfunded pension liabilities are so great, they're in the, what is it, $100 billion range?
$130 billion, $250
billion. $250. The numbers get so large that I don't understand how people can even comprehend all this.
Well, people's eyes glaze over when we start talking about pensions. It's boring stuff. It's confusing. But it really does matter. And the reason it matters is because that's why their property taxes are so high. That's why they want to keep raising income taxes. Not only did we have the $5 billion increase last year, but Pritzker, Biss, Kennedy, they all want billions more again. And people can't put up with it, you know, and even people who can put up with it say, I'm not going to be hoodwinked like that. So that's why we need to talk about pensions, and we need to change this narrative that's been going on for years, this unfunded pensions. It's not true. And at Wire Points, we did research to debunk that, because it really bothered me when I know people put in so much in taxes, and yet the politicians try to guilt us by saying, you taxpayers haven't put in enough. You need to put in more.
So when we hear, and I've used the phrase, and so have everybody, including, I'm a conservative, including conservatives on the editorial board of the Tribune. I don't see there is not a living conservative at the Sun-Times, which seems to be more like the elect Pritzker Rahm Emanuel paper. But whatever it is, people use the phrase. So tell me if it's... Is it accurate to say we have so much in unfunded pension liability?
Well, it is true. We have officially $130 billion. What's not true is the cause. So here's the situation. Our politicians in Illinois, and I'm talking about the state pensions right now, the five state-run pensions, our politicians have doled out so much in benefits over the last 30 years that those benefits have grown six times more than the economy. The benefits they've doled out in relative terms have grown eight times more than people's incomes. And they've grown 10 times more than inflation. They are swamping everything in its way. But the politicians don't talk about that. So the real cause of the problem is over-promising those benefits. That's what's killing us. Taxpayers have put in a lot of money, and we did the research, and we prove it.
Tell me about it.
So the problem is that you've had 1,061% growth in pension benefits.
Pardon me?
In the last 30 years. 1,061. Household incomes are up 127%. So you're talking about a multiple of eight times. That's why we're bankrupted here. And it's just not fair. And we need to let people know that. People need to make it clear. Editorial board should be writing about it. The attorney general should be investigating how did that happen.
Oh, yeah. Hey, she's going to really do that.
Yes, that's going to happen. She's going to investigate her father.
Right.
But, you know, people should be going crazy. But this fact, and it's amazing. We had no idea. We've all used underfunding. We've got to get it out there because it has implications for public policies and whether we have more tax hikes or not.
All right. If we're 1,600, you said, percent increase?
1,061. So 1,000%.
1,061% increase in pension benefits.
Promises. Yeah, benefits.
Promises, correct. Right? Now, the general understanding is that we can't change the pension system or the pension benefits because they're codified and locked by the Illinois Constitution.
Correct.
According to the Supreme Court that Boss Madigan and Ed Burke and other guys who run things elect. Correct?
That's correct.
I mean, that also should be, I think, said all the time. So how does changing the narrative affect the general outcome?
Well, we're always going to have that hard time as long as Madigan and those guys are there. But what we can't do is collectively use the same narrative that they do. We can't feed, we can't feed their narrative. We need to take them on. That's number one. Number two is that we can't accept their claim that we need progressive taxes and higher taxes. Right?
Well, that's what the Democrats want to do.
That's and that's the fight. And so here's the thing. When you look at the facts about how the pension benefits have just outpaced everything, the unions should, if we make our case well, the union should come to the table and negotiate with us. Again, wishful thinking, right? They should come and negotiate because their pensions are at the risk of being bankrupt as well, right? You take all these pensions across Illinois, they run the risk of going bankrupt. The own union members may not get paid. So we should have them at the table negotiating. But if they won't come, John, there's a lot of things that the legislature can do. Madigan won't do it, but there's a lot of things that can be done constitutionally.
Okay, like?
Well, first thing is, if they don't want to change pension benefits, freeze all salaries. If you freeze all salaries, then the pension benefits can't grow because pension benefits are tied to salaries. It's a tough one, but freeze them, number one. Number two, if that's not enough, start letting people go, right? If you start reducing the headcount, the pension benefits will slow down. Number three, you've got to get rid of all these benefits. And John, I know you know of all these benefits that are baked into the contracts. You know, people can accumulate unused sick leave, 2 years worth, and turn it in as if they worked for 2 years. They get pension spiking at the end of their careers.
I get it. In other words, a spike is I get a raise. I'm a superintendent of a school, and I get a raise at the end of the last month of my contract, right? The last month. and therefore that sets my pension for life.
And it's not just a raise, too, right? I mean, they could be, I volunteer for the last month of my career to teach a soccer team, and I get a bump there, or I'm doing an arts class, or I'm doing whatever, and then all of a sudden I'm getting this pay increase that I had no interest in my entire career, but all of a sudden I've decided that I need this.
If I can bump up my final salary, which determines my pension at the end of my career, I will do it. But it's more than just the superintendents. In most teacher contracts, if you announce that you're retiring your last 4, sometimes 5 years, you get automatic 5% increases every year. So they bump up your salary 25%. Boom, you've just increased the pension debt. And we've got to stop all those things. Those are all freebies. I don't know about you, but I don't have any contract that gives me guaranteed anything.
For 30 years, I've been working on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, and that's
how... They could fire me any minute.
And, here you got Palatine doing 10-year teacher contracts that locks in costs on taxpayers. Those things need to go. So there's a lot that can be done. So when they say they can't do anything because of the Constitution, it's an outright lie.
And how do you change the narrative?
Well, we're on this show. We need to keep talking to everybody we can. We need to get this kind of information in people's hands. It's a fight. It's a fight for getting that information out there.
Oh, you guys are mean. You guys are against the workers. I can just see them now on Twitter, all the SEIU little socialists that should be in Venezuela eating barbecued tapir or whatever they find in the zoo to complain.
John, I mean, that's what they do, right? They start name-calling. They start doing that. We can't revert by saying the opposite. Here's the reality.
Okay, sorry about the tapir part.
No, here's the reality is that places like Springfield are already announcing that they may have to fire policemen because they're running out of money. Same thing in Rockford. If you care about your policemen, if you care about your firemen, if you care about your teachers, then we need to have pension reform, because if we don't, people keep leaving, the tax base is shrinking, and guess what? We're going to have to start firing policemen. So not only are they going to lose their pensions, they're going to lose their jobs. So, it's ironic or whatever, paradoxical, but to take care of our public sector workers, we need to reform pensions.
Well, now, what about the morality of having people who work for the public having pensions in the $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 range? These teachers, and my wife is a teacher, and my son wants to be a teacher. While people who pay the taxes, I mean, they pay taxes as well, but they're not all the population of Illinois. Other people, most of the people who pay taxes don't have any kind of pension benefits anywhere near that, like our friend Jeff Carlin or John Cass.
It's true, but teachers and people in public unions will say, well, we don't get Social Security benefits. And that's their retort to that always. How do you counter that? I mean, I get that, but I don't see Social Security doing anything for me when I retire.
No, so first of all, it is true. They don't get Social Security. And so
the teachers don't.
And so a lot of the state workers do, but teachers don't. And so that should mean their pension should be a little higher. Now, let's be clear about two facts. One, the average Social Security payment in the United States is $15,000. It's not $50,000. It's not $70,000. It's $15,000. So nobody's getting rich off of Social Security.
Right.
Not the general, ordinary U.S. citizen. So, okay, let's make sure they're a little higher. But like you said, the average career teacher who retires today will have a $73,000 starting pension. Starting pension, correct. That's the average for a career.
Why does the pension go up?
Every year it goes up 3%. So after 25 years, now the average 60% of all teachers retire in their 50s, around the age of 58, 59. They're living 25 years in retirement or more. That means their pension, because of that 3% compounding, will be double in retirement. They will be at $150,000 pension benefit per year.
Holy crap.
We can't, again, you can be as empathetic with the teacher as you want, but the taxpayer, the single mom who's struggling with three kids in the South Side trying to pay this stuff with higher taxes, higher fees, higher rent, whatever it is, it's just not fair. So we get back to the moral point. This is not fair. This pension system is not fair. It's not moral.
Explain that 3% business again. So
sure.
They, just to make it clear so everyone gets it.
So if you're, let's say you're retiring, to make the numbers nice and round, you retire with a $100,000 pension.
Well, are there teacher pensions that are $100,000?
Oh, absolutely.
Or government.
No, come on. You got the nutria teacher now who finishes it for for openness. My kids go to New Trier.
And for openness, I have a relative who works in that system.
Okay. So, they have salaries of $130, $140 mm-hmm. when they're experienced. Their starting pension will be $100. So the first year after retirement, it will be $103,000. The following year, $106,000. And it compounds on itself so that in, 25 years, that $100,000 will be $200,000. If you just do the math,
right.
25% with a 3% each year will be a $200,000 pension when that person who retired at 58, when they're 83, and, we're living longer and longer,
right.
That pension is equal to $200,000.
But if you're John Cass, or Casso, as Jeff likes to call me, and I'm cooking my beans out of a can on a hot plate while living in an SRO, after I paid all my taxes, I'm not getting that. So where's the moral, is it kind of like an immoral political arrangement?
It is. You shouldn't have two different classes, the public class that is protected and the private class, which is exposed to the vagaries of the market. The tough part is that imagine if the stock market does go down, if the job climate gets bad, people lose their jobs, the private sector has less money, and yet they're asked to pay more and more to the protected public sector jobs. Now, I'm not trying to beat up on the public sector jobs, but it's a disconnect, and clearly Illinois has the 96% of state workers are unionized. We have a massively protected public sector, and it has become so immoral, unfair. It's why private sector citizens are leaving.
Now, the Democrats, in their wisdom, want to paper all this over by increasing the income tax even more. I mean, you can say what you want about who pulled toilets out of his house and who, did this or that, but basically all three of them, the three leading candidates, are all about the progressive income tax.
Yeah.
So what does that do to population? To the refugees, refugee crisis in Illinois.
It just makes it worse. It just perpetuates. It perpetuates the exact same thing that's been going on. And again, part of that, and this is why we did that research at Wire Points, is that they're going to say pensions are underfunded. They're going to use that as the biggest excuse that we've got to fund our pensions so that we have enough money for education and everything else. And they're going to perpetuate the same thing that we've been doing with Mike Madigan for 30 years. That's the sad part, and that's why we have to break the system. Can we? That's the question.
So simple to simplify, and oversimplification is dangerous when you're talking about money, but you're saying that we can address these issues without changing the Constitution.
Well, we need to change the Constitution. I'm not saying we can't address it without it, but if they don't want to do something, and until we can change the Constitution, we need to play hardball too. Because if they don't want to negotiate with us on benefits, which are outrageous, extreme in any way you want to look at it, and they want to perpetuate that, then we need to be on our side extreme and say, then we're going to do the things that we have to pull the levers that we can. If we can't pull any other lever, then we have to pull the salary level, the headcount level, and the perks level.
All right. So I understand we need police and fire. We need police. That's a state thing. We need first responders. But what other work do they do? You mean like office work?
What's
like
that?
Are they unionized office workers?
Well, all the state employees, all those who do everything that they do, 96% are unionized.
Is that why the Stevenson Expressway is crowded at 3 o'clock as opposed to 5, Jeff Carlin? Did you ever notice that?
Oh, yeah.
2:30, there's a rush hour.
Yep, always wonder that.
Why is that?
Why does that happen?
What is that like some sort of, does the private sector operate that way where at 2 o'clock everybody leaves and goes on the Stevenson?
Apparently.
I don't know. Maybe it's the private sector people going to their second job or the third job. Right?
Good one, Ted.
Hey, listen, I want to clarify one thing while we're on this. The research we did at Wire Points covered state funds. For those listeners who are wondering about Chicago, the Chicago Teachers Pension Fund was deliberately not funded for 10 years in a row.
Right.
That's a totally different story.
After Vallis left.
Yeah, so I want to, that we could have a different discussion because those are different games that were played there. But just for clarity so that people know, I do strongly admit and did research on the fact that the teachers' pensions in Chicago were not funded for 10 years.
If people want to get past the rhetoric of you don't like, you know, you're mean or you're naive, where do they go? How do they find this information that you're offering?
Well, of course, at wirepoints.com, we have that information. We've got a report there. We've got the big report. We try to back up everything we do. John, you know, we live in a world where everybody fights and they talk past each other, and it's all rhetoric. At Wirepoints, we try to put our data behind everything. We have to have the data. We have to prove it. And we want to be challenged on our data. So in our reports, you'll see all that. So if a teacher, a policeman, a fireman, if they want proof, we're happy to give it. And we should have a good, healthy debate with data. And that's at wirepoints.com.
Because I've talked to many state employees, police officers particularly, who I get along with well for some reason. And they're worried about their pensions not being there.
Well, they should be. If you talk about Chicago, let's move to Chicago, yeah. Police and fire pensions. They have less than 25% of the money in the funds that should be there. They're broke. In any private sector, that thing would have been closed down, money handed out, and said, we're done. It's broke.
Right.
The Chicago police fire funds are going to go broke. It's just a matter of time, unless they're bailed out in some way. They should be scared, and they should be looking for reforms. They should want new employees to have 401ks. They should be at the table saying, help us make sure that we get our pensions and that we have a fair system for Chicagoans so that we all stay and make the city great.
I got a feeling that the cops will get the short end of the stick like they always do. And in the meantime, there's really no discussion because if you're Boss Madigan, you want your legislators, your Democrats elected to the state house, you don't want a discussion like that because you want to use the unions as political shock troops in your districts.
Well, this is the whole thing that, you know, that drives me crazy, both about, you know, the teachers and overall, is that the unions have tremendous power. They control billions of dollars. When you talk about CPS, you're talking about controlling billions of dollars of salaries, billions of dollars of pension money.
And debt.
And debt. And so they love that control. Things like 401k scare the hell out of them because then the worker, the policeman, the fireman, the teacher, they would control the retirement money, not the union bosses. So they sell the union bosses sell really bad messages about things like 401ks, which would be ideal for a lot of these people.
Well, that's what we're all in if we have something like that. I mean, yeah. Everyone in the private sector is in something like that. How can you make the argument to the 50-year-old police officer who still doesn't want to retire that his son, who's getting on the job somehow because he knows somebody, might want to be, it's probably best for the system if that person, if the kid goes into the, or daughter goes into a 401k.
I mean, for me, I would think that the argument's easy. Do you really want Mike Madigan, Rahm Emanuel, Bruce Rauner, do you want them controlling your money? Do you trust them with your retirement money? Hell no, right? That's why these things are broke. If it was my son, I'd say, you control the money. They make sure they put it in, and that's the 401ks work that way. The money goes in every paycheck.
Right.
It's your money. It's portable. You can take it with you if you move to New York to be a cop there. That's the power of these 401ks. I think they're ideal for any state worker. Certainly, it gets the politicians' hands out of retirement
funds. What we have to do is get the rhetoric, put the rhetoric aside. All of us, whether you're a union worker, whether you're a private sector worker, whether you're thinking about fleeing to Tennessee like everybody else or Indiana or not, we all got to look and get valid information. And I think that it's a good place to start would be wirepoints.com.
Well, thank you. I think, yeah, we're working hard to get that information out there. We'll do more and more, but we've got to have a good, healthy debate. And in the end, what we all want a great Illinois. My parents came here 50 years ago as immigrants. This was the place to come, right? This is where you're Chicago and Illinois. This is where you came for freedom, for the grit, for opportunity. Right now, it's not that. It's the opposite. And that's what we fight for, is to get that Illinois, that Chicago back. We all want to see that.
Ted Dabrowski from wirepoints.com. Thanks for being here on the Chicago Way.
Thank you, John.
I'd like to thank all of you who listen to this podcast, The Chicago Way, the best damn podcast in the universe. Jeff Carlin and I do it not for money, but because we like talking to you guys.
Yep.
We don't get paid. We just love it. I like hanging out with him, and And we like hearing from you guys on Facebook and when you ask questions. And I just wanted to thank you for listening. So for Jeff Carlin and Ted Dabrowski of WirePoints.com, and from John Cass, mild-mannered columnist syndicated of the Chicago Tribune, this has been another episode of the best damn podcast in the United States, possibly the universe, the Chicago Way.